Okay, good morning. We are on Tet Zion Ahmed Aleph. We're in the middle of a discussion, so I'll fill in the background. We are currently on the fourth daf of the third and final perek, which is a meditation on the purpose of lashes. What are these malkot for? And so far, our thesis has been that while on the surface it may seem to be quite a brutal, even pre-medieval punishment. I was trying to think if lashes are carried out in any countries contemporarily, and I'm sure they are. I don't know if,
Singapore.
Singapore.
like,
Caning.
Singapore is it caning?
meaning legally, it's not just like tribal, but the
Graffiti.
courts took this.
Graffiti punishable by caning.
It's interesting. There was a. I actually came across a drasha from Rabbi Norman Lamm given from about 30 years ago, where he was writing about the behavior of Shmuel HaNavi, who after Shaul fails to kill the king Agag of Amalek, the famous scene. We actually read it as a haftarah last week. Shmuel walks in and goes, "What is that noise that I hear? I hear the bleating of sheep." At which point Shaul goes, "I don't know what you're talking about." He says, "And I got a sense you kept alive Agag." And he goes, "Yeah, I kept Agag alive and I kept the sheep. What's the point of killing all these things?" At which point that unleashes his sense that he wasn't following divine orders. And Shmuel puts Agag on the floor. And you imagine Jewish prophets to be these kind of peace-loving, hippie-like figures. And Shmuel says, "Put him on the floor." Takes a sword and just thrusts it into him and kills him on the spot. And it seems like he's almost merciless, blood hungry. It seems like a very vicious moment. And Rabbi Lamm set the task of his drasha as to come to an understanding of how to come to terms with the dissonance between how we might feel and what Shmuel did. And one of his, he gave four elements of a defense. Which is, I'd say, unapologetic, but it's he is apologetic about it. But he says that one element is at least we shouldn't judge the effectiveness of punishments on the basis of how we feel. And he says, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it is more humane when somebody does a crime to give them lashes once and for all and let them move on with their life. Than to lock them in jail for 30 years when they never get out into the world and they can't really be rehabilitated. And let's be honest, nobody thinks I'll be a crime and then I'll get some lashes, it'll be easy. But a lot of people think I'll do a crime and then I'll go put up on the government funds and I'll watch TV every day and I'll get meals every day. And there's an incentive for prison. And under the veil of humaneness, we end up having a completely unjust system. He's not saying I'm recommending those reforms today, but I don't know, is what he says. So that's the, I guess we should inject a level of humility into the discussion about lashes. It seems inhumane, and I certainly wouldn't want to be on the docket for a lashing, but it does seem to be, on the surface, quite brutal. But our thesis has been lashes is not about you did something wrong, as a consequence, we're going to beat you. It seems to be the whole thrust of the last three daf is this is about remedial treatment. This is about a remedy. This is about rehabilitating you and changing you. And if these won't affect a change, I'm not sure this is a good idea in the first place. So the first, we had one Mishnah so far, which is a list of those who are chayev, which has bred this discussion. We said, Elu el Elokin, who gets lashed? We had a list of people who engage in sexually forbidden behaviors, which we've said on the surface we count as immoral, but that's only because of the biblical text and because of Jewish teaching. The idea that you can't have a relationship with an aunt, we might get squeamish about it, but that's because of 3,000 years of biblical education. On the surface, no, it's not assuming lack of consent. So if, you know, if I'm sure, I think we mentioned that, I'm sure lots of us have. Either people we know or family we know, cousins. Any of you got cousins who married cousins? Yeah, my father's first cousin married a first cousin. I mean, and you know, it kind of becomes a unspoken oddity in the family sometimes. But if two people are consenting and they fall in love, anything immoral about that? Doesn't seem like it, and yet we're mandated to give lashes if somebody is warned not to do it and they engage in a sexual act that the Torah says is no. And then we had, which we'll get to later today, what about eating things I'm not meant to eat? Nobody is harmed by this, it seems, directly. I'm supporting a whole industry, and yet we're willing to lash. And the way we've introduced this is these are the least intuitive things. If we think about Makot as a treatise on political theory, this is about how do you keep societies just? And it involves policing things that don't cause harm to other people as well. If you want to talk about harm, we're going to get to the Bavas, Bava Metzia, Bava Kama, Bava Batra. That's where there's issues of ownership and theft and returning lost items. That's keeping people's property in check. This is keeping society in check by dealing with moral laws that have nothing to do with direct harm on other people, but an assumption that it will bring harm to society, which it dawned on me yesterday, because I've been struggling with how are we going to deal with that final agadita of Rabbi Akiva, who sits at the end of this whole Masechta and laughs and says, if Jerusalem fell apart, I now know that it'll be rebuilt. And if we get the sense that this is all about how do you make societies flourish, maybe we'll have a keyhole into what makes Rabbi Akiva laugh and recognizes we know that this fell apart. And the falling apart of the Second Temple wasn't a mystery. Why did it fall apart? For Chazal, why did the Second Temple era end? Hatred and a breakdown of society. And if we see Rabbi Akiva ending this Masechta, not just, oh, now that I know the prophecy came true, I know the other one will, as if he didn't believe prophecies to start with. We're saying, but now that I know, if you start neglecting the things that keep society together, it will fall apart. Maybe if you start attending to the things that hold society together, it can be rebuilt. So we're seeing how do you keep societies together? And so far, when it comes to lashes, we have been trying to find exceptions to the rule. We started off with you can't get lashes if you're getting mis at the same time, because they're fundamentally different. For Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva is the voice of this perek. So he started by saying, there is a view, Rabbi Shmuel says, if you get Chayv Misa, you get Malkus too. Because Misa, Malkus is, and remember the term? Misa Arichta. It's like Yom Tov. It's Yom Arichta, Rosh Hashanah's 2 days. So Misa Arichta, you get Malkus because it's all the same form of punishment. We just want to give you harm for what you've done. And Rabbi Akiva fundamentally thinks this is not about harm. There's nothing to do with Misa. That's a different breed of punishment. Kares, which is forgivable, is of the same species. Malkus, which is about trying to change you, is of the same species. That was Rabbi Akiva. And then we said, what about if you are, if there is a crime that the Torah tells you that there is a way to stop it in advance? Which we said, if you're impure, don't go into the temple. And then you go into the temple, which is a violation. Do you get whipped? And we had the view, Rabbi Yochanan said, yes, because it's a love shekadmo ase. It's the love that has the remedy beforehand, which the model we had last week was, if I tell somebody, stay in your seat during class, do not leave your seat, and then they leave, and then I say, come back to your seat. And then they say, oh, I came back, so that was my punishment. Like, no, that's not your remedy. That's just restoring the way it should be, and you're now going to get punished for the violation. That was Rabbi Yochanan last week. And we ended up figuring out there's actually only one case, it seems, of Lashakad Moaseh in the whole Torah, which is that case of going into the Mikdash. Because we said, what about the case of Ones, which is the unfortunate case of a man who abuses a young woman, and we're told you have to marry her, and then if he divorces her, he has to remarry her. And the question is, he doesn't get whipped if he remarries her. That's seen as a remedy, even though it's restoring order. And the assumption was, because of the words Kol Yamav, that he has to keep married to her his whole life, it positions it as a remedy. This is not just restoring order, but if you remarry her, you will be redeeming the mistakes that you've made and rehabilitate the relationship and the sin. And that's where we left off. And we said, oh, and that's Rabbi Yochanan. And that makes sense for Rabbi Yochanan, because there's a big distinction between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about how long you have to remedy a crime, and that's going to build into where we are now. According to Rabbi Yochanan, if there is a love, shenita glaaseh, there's a crime which a remedy is issued for you to heal, the example we'll give is the example of notar, which is the standard example. You have to eat a korban by a certain time. If you don't, it's a crime, so you think you get lashed, but we're told you have to burn it, so there's a remedy. So what happens if you refuse to burn it? What happens if the Beis Din say, okay, you need to get rid of this, and you say, nah, I don't want to. I purposefully didn't eat this because I'm on hunger strike against the temple, and I refuse to burn it because I'm not going to follow the law. Do they get lashes? I mean, this is an irritating citizen, for sure. Do we whip them right now? So for Reish Lakish, yes, you get one warning. You're in court, this is a lav shenitik la'aseh. There is a remedy, but it's a carve-out. If you follow this, we won't whip you. But you deserve to be lashed right now because you broke the law. Kunda Rabbi Yochanan, no. Until this becomes impossible for you to remedy, by your means, until you make it impossible to remedy, you don't get whipped. It seems to be, again, there is a resistance built in. We don't want to just knee-jerk reaction, you've committed a crime, bash. It's like, we need to get a sense that there is a mental finality to your crime. You have made it impossible for you to remedy. As long as that remedy exists, there is hope. And this sounds like we're kind of squeamish, and we don't want to hit people, and we're kind of like, let's see if we can weasel a way out, which is why on the second side, which we'll get to in about 3 minutes, the Gemara comes back with the force of, and if you do this, we will whip you in 8 installments. Meaning, we're not squeamish, but we're trying to figure out the most effective way to make you rehabilitated as a citizen. And if there is even the remotest possibility of you correcting this, we're not going to hit you, because we recognize that that isn't effective. And as a parent, maybe I shouldn't ask how many of you got hit by teachers when you were young. Maybe I shouldn't ask how many of you got hit by parents when you were young. And I'll cover this to say that occasionally I was. My father, not my mother. My father, it was not kind of anger. It was like a philosophy, which was... I was on the receiving end of that philosophy. But I think part of the reason that it is seen as problematic today is not only because people think, oh, it's child abuse, but it's not effective in the long run. In the short run, if you hit a kid, they're not going to do that again because they're terrified. But if they can find a way to do it without being discovered, I avoid the pain and I get to do what I want. But if you find a way to convince somebody, this isn't the right thing to do, not because I'm going to hit you, because long term this is a bad idea for you, for your peers, for your thriving, they're more likely not to recommit. So what we have is, if there's, for Rabbi Yochanan, if you have not made it impossible for you to remedy this, like if my daughter takes a toy off her sister and says, please return the toy, she says, no, and she's got it in her pocket, and I say, please give it back, no, and then it's been a few minutes, and then I say, please give back the toy. And then she throws it in an incinerator and says, no, I'm out of options now. You've made it impossible for you to remedy this. I'm going to have to find an alternative. Go and sit in the corner. Go and write lines. Or whatever it is. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Lav shenitik la'aseh, the Torah gives a remedy. If you make it impossible, you're going to get whipped. So lav shenitik la'aseh is not an outright exemption, but it is the furthest extension of a ability. And we said, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan disagree, and the way to prove it is this case. If somebody took an oath and said, this is not an oath for me, somebody said, I am not going to, or somebody promised, I will eat a bagel today. That was their promise. I will eat a bagel today. They've now taken a neder. It is now a biblical crime not to eat a bagel today. So, hour goes. 2 hours go, 3 hours go. And, you know, this might not be a crazy thing. Sometimes we know we're going to get busy, and we know I'm going to miss lunch. I know I'm going to be irritated. So I say, right, I'm going to set an alarm. I'm going to eat or wake up. And then we start pushing off the alarm, and we don't eat. And at the end of the day, because this is a Jewish community, somebody's getting excited. Oh, somebody's going to get whipped. So they're gathering around. You've got two witnesses, and they watched you didn't eat the whole day. The day ends. You've committed a crime. Do you get whipped? And we said both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish say no lashes, even though there are witnesses, even though you were warned. You need to eat. You need to eat or you'll get lashes. You need to eat or get lashes. And there were two witnesses. You don't get whipped. We said they both agree you don't, but different reasons as to why. The first view, which we pick up in the middle, is Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, why mishum dahavi lav shein bo maaseh? Because there was no action involved. V'chol lav shein bo maaseh ein lokan alav. And if there's no act, you can't get whipped. Which again, we could spend time examining the philosophy of, why should you not get whipped if there's no action? And we could tie that to maybe we don't think that this is something that can be rehabilitated in action. There's something else wrong. But for the most part, people tend to see it as less problematic. Meaning, I committed a crime by not eating. So you can't get whipped for not eating. That's the view of Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish Omer, Ein Elokim Mishum Davi Hasras Safik. Reish Lakish says, no, the reason you don't get whipped is because the warning you were given when the witness has said to you, if you don't eat, you will get whipped. That is never a warning with finality. Because every moment they say, 8 a.m., you'll get whipped if you don't eat. It's like, if I don't eat now, I'm not going to get whipped because I can eat in an hour. So you warn me in an hour. This isn't like a sure... It's to some degree, again, it would be like saying to a child, you've got to the count of 2 minutes to do this. So the first 10 seconds, they think, I don't have to do anything. When do they think they have to do something? 1 minute 59 is when it kicks in. So if you would theoretically to find a way to warn in the final instant, maybe that would be a hasra shelo safek. That would be like, if you do this, there will be this consequence. But writ large, there is impossibility to do that. So every time you go for a warning, it's kind of like an if, which again, in the mind of a child, the havdil, there's not really a warning. I don't feel the threat of immediate response because I don't feel finality. There's always more time. And that, for Reish Lakish, makes the warning ineffective. Because if I tell you, if you do this, something might happen, you don't have the mental finality that I'm committing a crime. You always feel like I'll whittle out of it or there won't be a response. Rabbi Yochanan and we don't disagree with that. We don't follow that rule, but that's the rule that Reish Lakish adheres to. And that's why he says you wouldn't get lashes in the case of not eating. The Tarvayu and the Gemara says, and both of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, it's not them on their own having this view. Alib Rabbi Yehuda, following Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, because we've got a brighter that says, the classic case, Lo Tatirim Menu Ad Boker, we're told you shall not leave over sacred meat until the morning. You have to eat it in the proper time. Vanotim Menu Ad Boker, and if you leave it over till the morning, you shall burn it. And this is Rabbi Yehuda's response. Ba'akad of Liten Aseach Alotase. The verse gives you a remedy to the crime. Lo Marsh Ain Lokin enough to tell you you don't get whipped. And this, by the way, this struck me as I was preparing this. What's the biblical proof that if there is a remedy, you don't get lashes? I'll give you a clue. This is it. Is this a biblical proof, or is this Rabbi Yehuda's hunch? Again, this could be a long-standing tradition, but this is not like the Pasuk says, V'lo lil kot. Pasuk says, this is a crime. In Dvarim, it says, if you commit crimes, you get whipped. And Ubuda says, well, it says a remedy. So it must be that you don't get lashed. So, again, this could be a long-standing tradition, in which case the question would be, why does God code the law this way? Or it could be that this is Rabbi Yehuda's teaching, that it can't be that the Torah would give you a remedy and you'd still get whipped. The remedy must be the replacement, which is, again, not a certain given based on the text. This is his sense, and this isn't, and this is where we'd get involved with what do the rabbis do. What the Orthodox thinker would say is, this is Rabbi Yehuda informed by the whole of Torah, of his study of the biblical text, saying, this must be what the Torah means. This is not a kind of rabbinic reform saying, I'm not comfortable with biblical lashes in this case, so we're going to replace the remedy of lashes with this. He's saying, I've read the psukim where God speaks to Avram about tzedek u'mishpat. I've read the story of the Exodus from Egypt. It is inconceivable to me that God would say, here's a remedy, lash him anyway. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Not that I'm reforming the system, but that has to be what God means in this text. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. It must be that if you're told that you can burn it in the morning, that's the remedy and not lashes. Because lashes cannot be just about we're inflicting pain. That's Rabbi Yehuda. And that's the only source we have. And both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish imply different things from this. Rabbi Yochanan died. What does Rabbi Yochanan imply? Hachataima debahakatuv. This is the reason that the Torah, in this case, gave you a remedy. Halo bahakatuv loke. But if the Torah wouldn't have said you should burn this in the morning, you would get lashes for leaving over meat. Why would you get lashes? Alma hatra savik shma hatra. It must be because even though in every waking moment you are being warned that don't leave it over, don't leave it over, don't leave it over, but it's always a safek, you still get lashes, so clearly hatra safek counts. That's Rabbi Yochanan's view, and that's the view we're going to take, and that's why the Torah has to teach you, or that's why Rabbi Yehuda has to say, the fact there's a remedy, that's the only reason you don't get lashes, otherwise you would. Clearly, hatra safek works. Otherwise, the Torah wouldn't need to tell you there's a remedy. Otherwise, you'd get lashes. That's Rabbi Yochanan's reading. Reish Lakish died. Reish Lakish says, no, that's not the insinuation. Hachatam debarkatav. This is what the Torah is teaching you. Halo barkatav loke. If the Torah wouldn't have given you the remedy, you get whipped, which teaches you what else happens, what else defines the crime of leaving something over that might give you a reason not to get whipped. You're constantly being warned, so it's a hatra safek. What else is definitional to the crime of leaving over that you might think you shouldn't get hit? There's no act. This is also a passive thing. So this is where Reish Lakish says, I'm a love shame, but Master Lokin a love. What I learned from here is you get whipped even if there's no act involved. Now, both of these insinuations seem to be true, right? Leaving over meat is both passive and constantly being warned. So both the inferences seem to be true. So in a minute, we're now going to say, well, why don't you take the view that he takes? Reish Lakish, nami, havada hatra safek hu. First response, Reish Lakish, you have to also agree this is a hatra safek, and the hatra safek seems to be effective. So how can you take the view that a maybe warning is no good? Oh, he follows in that respect a different teaching in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, where the Tanya Rabbi Yehuda teaches, and if you think 2 weeks ago we had an odd case where we had a person who had a relationship with their sister, their mother's sister, and their father's sister, we said that seemed odd, and then we made it odder by saying, and it's the same woman who's their sister, their father's sister, and the mother's sister, and they get lashed three times while they're trying to figure out what happened. So here we've got a case where somebody isn't sure who their father is.
That was an episode of Jerry Springer, that last one.
That was an episode of Jerry Springer, and everybody got hit. There is a case of a person who knows that their father is one of two men. He knows that his mother had a relationship with one of two men, and it doesn't have to be licentious. It could be that they were married, got divorced, and then he was in breach of the rule called Havchana. Anyone familiar with Havchana? Havchana is there is a rule that after a divorce, a woman is not allowed to remarry for 3 months. And the explicit reason for that is, if she has a baby, we need to know whose baby it was. And the Havchana, the 3 months, is enough to know if the baby is born before 6 months, we know it was from the first husband. If the baby is born after, we know it's from the second husband. There are questions about whether that rule still applies today when we can do DNA testing and there are other ways to figure out who the baby is. But let's say he was in breach of Havchana and he remarried. So we don't know who the father is. It's one of two. The child has a biblical obligation to respect parents. And we could always say, you know, be machmer and just respect both of these gentlemen. But there is a crime to hit your father. And he thinks, I'm really smart, you know what I'm going to do? It's a suffix, so they can't punish me. So I'm going to smack this one, wait a minute, and then I'll smack that one. And each case, you won't get me. So that's the case. Ditanya, Rabbi Yehuda has a teaching. Hakazev, hakazev, hakazev. If you hit one, and then you said, give me a moment, please, and went and hit the other, kilelzeh, or he curses one, and the guy says, what did I do? He says, no, you didn't do anything. I just need to create this situation because I'm angry with the other guy. So I cursed one. V'chazav kilel zeh. And then I went to curse the other one. Hikesh shneim bevat achat. What happens if you say, you know what? I'm really irritated. I just want to give one to the system. So you line the two of them up and you smack them together. So now it's not like you can separate the act. If you hit them together, by the way, have you committed a crime for sure? Because one of them is your father. So now if you hit them both together, we know you've committed a crime. And there would be a question about, you know, can we pinpoint how you did it? But it's clear you did. So if you hit them both, so the rabbis in that brayta say, it doesn't matter whether you hit them separately, or you hit them together, or you curse them. This is a prohibition and you're chayev. Rabbi Yehuda says, b'vat achat chayev, b'ze achazeh patur. You're only chayev if you do it together. Meaning if you're absolutely sure that this crime was committed. And what's his reason? His reason is because you need a firm warning. And if I warn you before you hit this man, if you hit him, you might be chayev misa. Might. Boom. Next guy, if you hit him, you might be chayev misa. Might. And you hit him, that's not a proper warning. But if there are two standing there and you're like this and he says, you will definitely be chayev misa if you hit them both, then he hits them, that's a crime. So this is Reish Lakish saying, I follow Rabbi Yehuda's view, bless you, that a hasra safek doesn't work. Now, what is the problem with Reish Lakish saying, I follow Rabbi Yehuda's view here, is that that doesn't obviate the fact that in the previous case, Rabbi Yehuda says, you would get lashes for not eating notar. And that's also a case of hasra safek. Every minute, it's a possibility. And he says, you would get lashes if the Torah didn't tell you. And he said, oh yeah, but I follow Rabbi Yehuda here. So what's the question now? Who's inconsistent? Rabbi Yehuda's inconsistent. Because he says, with notar, you'd get lashes if it weren't for this remedy, even though it's a hasra safek. And he's saying, oh, when it comes to hitting your father, you have to have surety. So Reish Lakish, you can hit both and say, well, I follow Rabbi Yehuda here about hasra safek, and I follow him here. About Lav Shem B'Maseh. But Rabbi Yehuda's intention with himself, and we'll come to that. But either way, we have the teaching of Rabbi Yochanan to deal with. Rabbi Yochanan Nami, first brother line is Patur. Rabbi Yochanan Nami, Havada Lav Shem B'Maseh. Rabbi Yochanan, you said that Lav Shem B'Maseh, you never get lashes. And when Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, the reason you don't get lashes here with Nosar, we know you don't because of Lav Shem B'Maseh, but I have to tell you that because if I didn't tell you that, you might get lashes. Because Hasra Safek is a good Hasra. Okay, but it's also got no Maisa there. So you'd think that would be proof again. Rabbi Yochanan Havada Lav Shem B'Maseh. So how do you cope with that? Husavalaki Hadama, he follows a different teaching of Rabbi Yehuda in that respect, in the following name of the following teachers. Ravidi Bar Avin, Rav Amram, Rav Yitzchak, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Meshum Yosei Glili. In the name of Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of his teacher, Rabbi Yosei Glili, Kol Lav Shabbatora, Lav Sheish B'Maseh, Lokan Alav, every pro-crime in the Torah, you get whipped for. Lav Shein B'Maseh Ein Lokan Alav. But if there's no act involved, if it's passive, you don't, with three exceptions. Chutz, Min HaNishba, if you took an oath that you were in breach of. Umeymar, Umeymar, anyone familiar with what Temura is? The Masechet Temura, what is this about? This is if you've designated a sacrifice. This goat is my sacrifice. And then you go, oh no, this is my kid's favorite animal. This is Billy the goat. They love Billy. What's the name of another goat?
Theodore.
Theodore. Interesting. Nice to know what your farm would look like. So Billy and Theodore. So, oh, I really like Billy. So what I'm going to do is, Theodore, they're worth the same amount of money. I'll just switch them out and I'll take Theodore instead. That's a crime. And that's called Temura. And that's switching out items. And you'd think the value's the same, what's the problem? And that, if you wanted to study that, we'd have to do tomorrow, which is why is this a crime to switch out? But that's a crime. Is there an act involved? Not, I just took one instead of the other. So it's not seen as an act, and yet you'd get lashes for that. V'makalel et chavero. And if you curse somebody, that's a crime, but it's a speech act, and we don't see speech acts as really act, but you get whipped for that anyway, b'shem, if you curse with God's name. Full stop. So we've now got these two views. Again, we've got the central brayta where Yehuda says, if you leave over sacred meat, you don't get whipped because the Torah tells you to burn it. Had the Torah not given you that remedy, you'd get beaten. And we say, well, why would you get hit in the case of Nosar? There's no act involved. And it's a Hasra Safek. And Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish say, oh, Reish Lakish says, this proves that even if it's passive, you get hit. And Rabbi Yochanan said, this proves even if it's Nesra Safek you get whipped. And we said, yes, but it also proves your counterpart's point, because it proves both. So Rabbi Yochanan says, oh no, I follow Rabbi Yehuda's teaching elsewhere, where he says if it's a Lav Shein B'Masa, you don't get whipped. And Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, I follow the case of Rabbi Yehuda of hitting the father, said if it's Nesra Safek you don't get whipped. And now we're left with, okay, so Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, you found your kind of source for your view, but your source is both Rabbi Yehuda. How can he be in conflict with himself? Which is how the Gemara picks up. Kasha, first one on his et. Kasha, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda. How can Rabbi Yehuda simultaneously say Hasra Savik isn't good and Hasra Savik is good? Or Lav Shein B'Masa you get whipped, Lav Shein B'Masa you don't get whipped. So this is the resolution. Yes. Ila Reish Lakish, if it's Reish Lakish, Trait and I leaded Rabbi Yehuda. Well, it's actually not, now that I realize what you're saying. You're saying it's two different Rabbi Yehudas. So you're saying it's two teachings about what Rabbi Yehuda might have held. So that's the first. Utrei Tanai, there are two teachings, I'll leave to Rabbi Yehuda and then Rabbi Yehuda, and we're not sure what Rabbi Yehuda felt. That's for Reish Lakish. Ila Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan's got a more hopeful answer, because he's not going to say nobody knows what Rabbi Yehuda felt. He's going to say, Ha Didei Ha De Rabbe. Says the view in the bright at the top of the page, that was Rabbi Yehuda speaking himself. But if you remember, right above us in the yellow lines, first one, the note Yochanan, it said Rabbi Yehuda Omer Meshurim of Yosei Aglili. He says in the name of Yosei Aglili, that was his teacher. So you can say, oh, that's not Rabbi Yehuda's view. That's his teacher's view that was reported by Rabbi Yehuda. But he doesn't really hold that way. He doesn't believe, Lav Shein B'Masa, you wouldn't get whipped. So we've now got the two resolutions and a full stop. So what the topic that we have discussed so far is Hasra Safek, which we take the bottom line view is, it's good. And the question, I guess, would be why? If I say to my kid, don't do this, otherwise you might get a response. Reish Lakish says, they shouldn't get punished because it's not a real warning. And we say, no, that is a real warning. Why would I say that is a real warning if it's true that psychologically they don't know they're going to get punished?
I guess they've decided in their mind what they're going to do. So in their mind, it's not a suffering.
Interesting. Well, it must still be a suffix in their mind whether they'll get punished. But what is not a suffix in their mind?
If they're going to do what you want them to do.
Which they know is wrong. And again, that could be the key. Meaning, for Reish Lakish, we're all looking at the punishment. Do you know you're going to get hit or not? But again, for the thrust of our teaching that this is not about you're going to get whipped. This is about we need to remedy the situation that you've done something wrong. Hasra suffix, it's a suffix whether you're going to be liable or not. But there's no suffix that this is wrong. I've warned you, don't do this or you might get hit. Thinking, oh, you're right, it's wrong, but the punishment, I don't know if it'll kick in. And we say, we don't care if you're not sure about the punishment. And this is where you get the pushback, where you're going to get punished because we know that you knew it was wrong, even though you weren't sure you were going to get hit. And this is about correcting your moral deficiency rather than just adjudicating the consequence of a bad act. So that seems to be where we've fallen down on Hasra Safek, and we've dealt with, we're going to pick back up with the question of remedies. If the Torah gives you a remedy, we're going to have the case of sending away the mother bird. Yeah.
I'm just wondering why, like, mechanically, or why would the Gemara record Rabbi Yehuda giving his Rebbe's, Rabbi Yossi Haglili's position? That seems to be not consistent with his own position.
Excellent question. What would your defense be if I asked you that? If I said, why would they have Rabbi Yehuda record the view of his teacher that's not his view? What would you say in his defense?
Well, they don't have Rabbi Yossi Haglili's being able to say it in his own name because he's not.
Okay, so one defense might be we needed to preserve the tradition.
For posterity.
Alternative? Maybe he wanted to not just record it for posterity in honor of Yosei Aglili, wanted to record it for possible future adjudication, saying, I recognize I don't feel that way, but somebody might, and I need to, people should know that my teacher did, and maybe I harbor the possibility that it's true. Or intellectual honesty, humility, all sorts of moral possible reasons it's true. And we could delve more into it.
As a biographical detail, it's interesting that Rabbi Yochanan would assume that a student really might not agree with his teacher. Because when Rabbi Yochanan loses Reish Lakish, he wants to have a student who'll disagree with him. This is something he thinks that...
Oh, very interesting. He says he gets some students who follow him who start saying, yes, Rabbi. And he says, I don't want a yes man. I want you to disagree with me. And I miss the day when Reish Lakish would give me 24 reasons to disagree with me. And you just nod and nod and nod. He says, yes, Rabbi. He says, right, get out. And that's the end of that conversation.
Do we assume that the student follows the teacher? And on one side, oh, yeah, Rabbi, you're just quoting his teacher. He must endorse that. Rav Yochanan is like, no.
Which is interesting, which again, if we had all the time in the world, we could put that into the theme of this perek, which is, again, we don't need everybody to follow blindly. And it is possible to have divergence. Society can flourish with disagreement. This is not about whipping and fear and following the line. This is about just a remedial treatment to keep society healthy, and disagreement might be healthy. And it may have started with, oh, he follows it, it's got to be his teaching. And then we said, well, actually, it's okay for there to be diversity, disagreement, that could be healthy for society. And we're just trying to border the moral boundaries, and this is within it.
Is there more weightiness to the previous generations, you know, closer to Moshe Rabbeinu's thing?
Generally speaking. Halachically speaking, it's interesting because there are conflicting ideas. In rabbinic tradition, halacha kabat tarai means we follow the position of the last teacher. We assume the person who's seen all the other views is the most educated on a position and has come to the most reasonable conclusion because they've been exposed to everything. So we follow the last person. But this idea that there is authority to earlier teachers is also built in the sense that you can't overrule the previous court unless you've got more in number and wisdom, which is very hard to measure. So the answer is yes and no. Last thin line. Tanan Hatam, it was taught over there, Hanotel Emel Abanim, if you take the mother away from the children, which is of course talking about which case? Talking about birds, yes, not about people. If you take the mother bird, if you take the mother with the children, meaning you didn't send away the mother bird, is that a crime? What is the biblical obligation? What is the mitzvah?
Send
away the mother bird before you take the eggs. We don't have to ask why, the different debate, but that's the obligation. You did not send away the mother bird. You took the mother and the children together. Crime. What do you do? Missed opportunity. So you get whipped. It's a crime. Should you get whipped? Was there an act?
Yeah.
Yes. Were you warned?
Yeah.
Yes. You should get whipped. That's what it seems. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Loke, Ve'en Meshalech. What might you think? Oh, no. Oh, fine. I'll send it away now. You think, I'll put them all back, and now I'll send away the mother bird. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, mate. You've done it. It's happened. You're going to get whipped. Which again, this is the Gemara oscillating between, we don't want to whip, we don't want to whip, we don't want to whip. Don't think we're queasy. We will whip you. And Rabbi Yehuda says, you will get whipped if you do this. We're trying to avoid it, but not because we're kind of queasy about it. We're trying to make it effective. And here, if you violated this and you were warned and you didn't act, you get lashes. And the sages say, Mishalach ve'en olok. The Chachamim say, no, this is a case of lavshanitik la'aseh. You can put them back, send the mother bird away, and you don't get whipped. Zeh klal. This is the general teaching. Kol mitzvah lo ta'aseh shesh b'kum ha'aseh ein chayven alav. Anytime you have a possible remedy on the table, we won't whip you if that remedy exists. And we could talk more about Rabbi Huda's view here, but we're going to keep moving. Rabbi Yochanan says, a cryptic line, ein lanu ela zot va'od acheret. There are only two cases of this. Two cases of what? There are many cases of love shenita klase. So it turns out there are only, the Gemara is going to spend the next, until the end of today basically, which hopefully will be relatively smooth, is there are only two cases where even though it's a love shenita klase, you might get whipped. Because there is a view, even the view that you've got a remedy until the last moment, according to everybody, if you obliterate that remedy, you get whipped. So there's a lav shenita klaseh. For example, you've taken the mother and the children, birds, You say, oh, I want to remedy it, so I'm going to put it back and send the mother bird away. What happens if you took them and then you, like, killed the mother? So you couldn't put it back and send her away. The remedy no longer exists. So lav shenitzei glaseh, you can't whip me. That's a misconception. If you've obliterated the possibility of remedy, you get whipped. Because again, that's like my daughter saying, I won't give it back, I won't give it back, and then throws it in the incinerator. It's like, my ability for you to find a remedy through ordinary means is now gone. And that's not like, what can I do? It wasn't a real crime because it's a lav shenitzei glaseh technically. No, it was a crime and I'm trying to remedy it and you've taken the remedy off the table. So now I have to find an alternative means of discipline. Yeah. A love.
Right. Sort of like giving tzedakah. Like, you should give tzedakah, but if you don't, it's not.
Right, it sounds like it's a mitzvah aseh.
Right.
But the psukim have a lo involved. So there is a, you shall not take without sending away. So you're right. It sounds like an aseh, and I was toying with that as we were reading this. But it's also phrased as a love. So this is a prohibition. You'll get whipped, and if you remove the remedy, you will get hit. And this is where Rabbi Yochanan says, there are only two cases where you can take the remedy off the table. So the Gemara is oscillating back again. So we've now come, you'll get whipped if you do this. And the Gemara says, but even, you should know, there are very few cases where if you, that you are capable of removing the remedy to the extent that we have to whip you. Yeah.
I guess I, sort of along the lines, first thing, how is it possible to remedy a lo sa'aseh? Meaning, it was done in time. Because it, and I say, I understand, you, I can put on my film later. I can
thank you.
I can...
yeah.
I can... I can do an essay at another time, but if I, you know, if I violate a lo sa'aseh, in this case, not sending away the... That's done. There's no remedy for that moment.
And I think that's what's so radical about this, that there is no pasuk anywhere that clearly says, if there is a remedy on the table, you don't get whipped. But it is inconceivable to Rabbi Yehuda and our tradition that if there's a remedy on the table, we're going to whip you anyway. So we know, if there's, there haklal, and this is where you'd want there to be, and show me the pasuk. It says, there haklal, if there is an aseh on the table, it does remedy it. And I guess the it falls to us to understand why, and it must be that there are certain assumptions that crimes can be committed and remedied even though that they are committed. But at the same time, we don't want to think, oh, so it's not a real crime, or we're queasy about punishing, or, but there is a reluctance to kind of hit physically, because it's not going to be most effective. Not human psychology tells us this, but this is must be what God thinks on the basis of our learning. So it has to be the case. But there are cases where that remedy won't work, and you need to get whipped. Indeed.
You gave him Kastrona.
You warned him.
You warned him. Said to him, send the bird away.
And he said, okay. No, I don't care.
I don't care. Or you're going to get whipped.
He said, I don't care.
And then he still didn't have it. Then he can send it out.
And then we still say, if you send it away, you won't get whipped. Now, Kuntur Reish Lakish, if he says, don't care, at that point you say, okay, we gave you a chance, we're going to whip you. That's not the how we follow. We follow Rabbi Yochanan, and it says, as long as you don't kill the bird, as long as... Because why would you not kill the bird? Let's say, I don't care, I'm not going to, but I'm holding the bird in my hand and I'm not killing it. What do I seem to be holding on to, even as the criminal? Yeah, I can't quite bring myself to make it impossible. So we think, what's going to, at this point, not like just we should have compassion, what's the most effective path to make this person a productive citizen is not to say, right, you missed your chance, let's whip you. Because he's kind of taunting us. He's saying, yeah, come on, hit me. I want to be a villain. I want to be a criminal. I want to be a delinquent. We're saying if there's a possibility there, we think that the most effective path forward is to give you that chance. But the moment you kill that bird, we're done. We're out of options. And now you get hit because we think maybe that's the only speech you understand or the only language you'll understand. That's exactly where we're going to come now. Let's say you've done this and you're holding the bird in your hand and then as a cardiologist, the bird has a heart attack. And you think, ooh.
Oops.
Yeah, you're going to whip me now. And the answer is no. The remedy has to be removed on your volition. And we're now going to have some discussions of, hold on a minute, you said, but, so there, then that's why there are only two cases. Where Rabbi Yochanan says, there are only two cases where you can remove the remedy. One is this case where you kill the bird. It's possible the bird dies, in which case you didn't do it, but you can kill the bird. And then there's one other case where you have the power to remove it. At which point you could imagine the students being like, yeah. And that's what happens. The student says, yeah. First one of the light is Ain, third wide line. Rabbi Lazar says, and I know you need to get an Uber. So I'll book that for you in 2 minutes. Unless anybody's driving to Newark after this. Yeah. Okay. Amar Blas Rabla says, Heicha, so go on, which is the other one where you can remove the remedy? Because I'm thinking there must be thousands of cases. For example, the case we said last week, somebody abuses a young woman. They have a biblical obligation to marry her, which we discussed last week. They get married and there's a prohibition to divorce her. He divorces her. We said, okay, you need to remarry her. So what's the remedy? Remarrying her, and you don't get whipped. How might you nullify the possibility of remarrying her? So that's not in your control. But we said in that case you get whipped because going in you knew it was impossible. So that's a love that doesn't have, is not an etik lase. He could kill her. So then maybe that's the second case. And the Gemara's response is going to be, well, if you kill her, what are you going to get charged with? Murder. And you can't get punished with Malkus and Misa together. So, yes, we don't encourage that. But that's not a case of love, Shindik, let's say, where you get whipped, because you wouldn't get whipped. You'd get executed. What if she died? That's not you. So you haven't. So it's impossible in that case to ever get whipped, because you can never take the remedy off the table of your own volition where you will get whipped for it. Tosfot at the top of the page where I put some highlights discusses the case of if she just dies, he says, well, that wasn't you. Lo bat le'ihu, it wasn't you. He says, oh, what about if you killed her b'shogeg? Meaning this is the second bit. You were climbing on a ladder and you fell on her. You went, oops. It was you who now nullified the remedy. But, right. So this is less about attributing this result to you than attributing it to your intention. Because again, it's like if my daughter said, I won't give it back, I won't give it back, I won't give it back, and it flung into the incinerator. At that point, I'm not going to say, I'm out of options because you've given me, I'll say, oh, that was an accident. And now it's difficult because, well, how do I discipline you now that I know that was an accident? And this probably happens with people parenting, and I'm sure it's happened to me, where I've wanted to, and then it becomes impossible because she accidentally ripped her child, her sister's toy. And I'm like, oh, gosh. Oh, just forget it. Just go and watch TV. I don't know what to... But yeah, you're stuck. And that's what Tosfot said. Shahara was shogeg. Dim Kane, kamo misam ele. It's like she died by herself. It's not your volitional act. So we can't attribute that to you either. So Rabbi Lazar says, Heicha, what is this other case then? You said there's a second case where you can consciously take the remedy off the table. Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan is a good teacher, says, L'chi tishkach. Go look. Figure it out, my friend. I'm not going to give you all the answers. Figure out what the other case is. Nafak dag v'ashkach. He went out, he did some research, and he found it. He says, I found the second case where you can take it off the table. D'tanya. It's taught, On shigurishim Yisrael, who marks v'en elokim, konu elokim v'en amasi. If somebody is married to this woman he abused, he has, and divorces, he has to remarry her. If he's a Kohen, he can't, and he gets lashes. If he's Israel, he can marry her. But if it's the case where we take the view that you only get whipped if you nullify the possibility, how is that ever possible? I understand with the case of the bird, you can just squeeze it in your hand and you've now made it impossible to remedy. How in the case of this divorce, where you have to remarry her, could you ever take the remedy off the table consciously? This is the case we discussed. We said, if you kill her, we can't say, oh, you took the remedy off the case, we're going to whip you, because we're going to execute you for murder. So that's not a case. Says, oh, I know how you can do it. How can you make it, when would it be illegal for you to remarry this woman you divorced? If she's married to somebody else, she's now an Eshet Ish. If she marries somebody else of her own volition, did you take the remedy off the table? No, she did. So what's the only case where you could take the remedy off the table by her getting married? If you're the shaliach who accepts the kiddushin on her behalf. So somebody comes to you and says, will you be the shaliach to marry this woman? So you're like, oh yes, I'm so angry with the rabbis, I refuse to do my duty and remarry this woman. I'm going to accept kiddushin on her behalf as somebody else. So have you taken it off the table? So the Gemara is going to say, well, this gets into a discussion of shlichut. Ish viti shliach, if you're really a shliach, I kam a kabla le. It's her, it's not you. You're standing there, but the way shlichut works is you're a stand-in for her, so it's not you taking her off the table, it's her. I lo shvite shliach, and if you're not a shliach, kol timinei, you don't have the power of lo klumi, it's a meaningless act. So there's no way to do it. So we're still thinking, how can you take the remedy off the table and not remarry this woman and obliterate the possibility? You can't kill her. I mean, you can be executed. You can't remarry her to somebody else without her being the primary actor. Elam Rishim B'Maradak is on Shadira Barabin. If you stand in public and you take an oath, I take an oath, I will never marry this woman, it's now a crime for you to be in violation of your oath. So maybe that's how you take it off the table. That's good to call to the person who says that if you take an oath in public, you can't nullify the vow. But there is a view that says you can nullify. I could stand in public and say I'm never going to marry her, but you have an obligation to nullify that vow and fulfill your duty and marry her. Oh, there's a big difference between a public vow and a vow by the public. And that's if I said to all of you, not just I take an oath, but all of you, by my consensus, bind me by this oath. It's now Aldat Rabim, and I'm now bound. It's almost anyone Harry Potter fans. That's an unbreakable vow, according to most views. Dama Amema Helchta Nedush of the Barabim Yeshafar Aldat Rabim Einlo Hafara. If you do it with consensus, you can never obliterate that vow. So I've now taken a vow never to marry this woman. I've got an obligation to remarry her, but I've taken an oath that's unbreakable. It seems to be I took it off the table. This is case number two. And now the Gemara is going to say, hold on a minute, I can think of another case. Imagine I steal Jay's phone, and you say, okay, you've got to give it back. And I say, into the incinerator it goes. I took it off the table. Seems like that's case number three. What would your pushback be to say, no, that's not really off the table?
You have to pay him the
value. Yeah, it's not like there's nothing I can do. I have an obligation to pay you back. It's not ideal, but I've still got an obligation. So the two leka, haika, surely there are other cases. The Torah says don't steal, and says return it, and there's a way for you to stop doing that. If I borrow money off you, and you say you can borrow money, but I need a security, and you're kind of on the fence about what to give as a security, and I say, I'm not off to stop dilly-dallying, and you go into the house and you take the TV and say, this will be my security, that's a prohibition. You're not allowed to take a mashkan from somebody. They have to give it to you voluntarily. So let's say you took the security, the Torah says, and you've got to give it back. And he's got to give you a security. But you might not give it back. You might destroy the mashkan, at which point it's impossible. Those are the two cases. Hatam, second last line, kiven dechai b'tashlumin ein lo kenu mishalim. You got to pay back the TV that you broke or the phone that you destroyed. So that's not a case. There's still only two cases. Madgav l'abzera heikam ashkan shel ger. Oh, but we found a case that is impossible. Because let's say I went into, there's a convert. And the convert wants to borrow my money. I say, you can borrow my money, but I'm going to take security. And he says, what should I give you? And I say, just stop, I'm going to take your TV. So I took the convert's TV. I have to give it back. Let's say the ger now dies. Who do I have to pay now? Nobody, because the ger, technically speaking, if they haven't married and had kids, legally speaking, they've got no relatives. So there's no way for me to repay this anymore. So it seems to be, I've now found a case where I can take the remedy off the table, and you should now get whipped for taking the mashkon because there's no one to pay back. Hatam gavra batashlumin hu v'shibuda de gerhu depaka. Says, no, in that case, the ger took it off the table by doing what? By dying. You didn't. If you killed him, again, you got for murder. And them dying is not you taking it off the table. So that's still not. We've only got two cases. Killing the bird, where you're not got for execution because murdering birds is not a crime. So killing the bird, or we've said taking a vow with public consensus, you're not going to remarry. But there's no other case where the remedy can be taken off the table by the criminal, it seems. There can be an possible remedy the ger might die and I can't give it back. That's not you. So again, there's a reluctance. We're not going to whip you just because there's no remedy. We're only going to whip you if you remove the remedy off the table. Now the Gemara says, Vahikapeya, we'll stop when we get to the yellow. Vahikapeya, what about leaving over a corner of the field, which he said you need to leave over for the poor? You need to give the unfortunate, you need to leave them the corner of the field. How could you, and again, this is a lo, it says lo techaleh, don't destroy. So it's a love. So I'm not allowed to clear up the corner. How could I violate this prohibition? Cut up, harvest everything in the corner. And then it says, v'leger ta'azovatam, you have to help the poor, meaning you should still give them. So there's a remedy there. How can I obliterate the remedy? It says, but there is a case where you can take the remedy off the table according to all views. The Tanan, it taught, mitzvah pe'a lahavish min hakama. The mitzvah is to take it from the, to leave grain from the standing wheat. Lo fish min hakama, if you didn't set it aside from the standing wheat, ro'avish min ha'omrim, you leave over sheaves for the poor. Lo fish min ha'omrim, avish min ha'kri. If you didn't leave it over from the sheaves, once it's in the storehouse, you have to leave them a pile. Ad shlo mariach, until you smooth it over. Maricho, once you've smoothed over the pile, which is a new agricultural stage in preparation of the grain, you smooth it over, ma'aser, you are now obligated to give tithing. So you say, well, you can't leave over some, because you now owe the levy some of this grain. Until that point, you don't owe the levy anything. You've smoothed it over, fine, you've got to give ma'aser, but once you've given ma'aser, you now have to leave over payah. So that's still possible, but according to this reading, that is the final point at which you can give payah. Once you start grinding it up, you can't do it anymore. So it sounds like you can nullify it by doing what? By start grinding up your grain. Now you say, I'm not going to give payah. I'm going to gather it up. You can still do it. I'm not going to give payah. I'm going to take the sheaves inside. Until you get to the point you've smoothed it over, this is your last chance to give payah. So I'm going to grind it up. I'm not going to give any payah. Seems to be you can't do it.
Which would be an instance where you've taken the remedy off the table.
Right. So that's the assumption. And we say, oh, could Rabbi Shmuel, you got Rabbi Shmuel's view, to Amma Af Mashish Mina Isis. It says, no, even once you've baked it into dough, you can still give loaves of bread to the poor, so you've never really taken it off the table. Is there still a way you can take it off the table?
Literally.
Yes, literally. Eat it all up. Rabbi Shmuel Nami Mishkachala, Da Achal Isa. So surely you can eat it, and that would take it off the table. El Azot Vod Acheret, aha. Says, yeah, you're right. This is actually the second case Rabbi Yochanan must be talking about. It's got to be the bird. Are you killing the bird or you're eating your cake? And you get whipped too. That is the second case. What was our case previously that we said was the second case?
The rapist.
So we're going to have to take that back off. Aval oneslo. It can't be that that's the second case. When we say you can't nullify a vow taken by public consensus, that's only if it was a voluntary vow not to eat a bagel. Aval advar mitzvah yishlofer. But if you've got an obligation to fulfill a duty, even if you took the most unbreakable vow, so if Snape took the unbreakable vow to kill Harry, he can't say it's unbreakable. So, well, you're not allowed to kill. Nullify the vow. You can nullify the vow. There's a mitzvah, and this is going to be an odd proof of that. Ki hadahu mikre dedarki dava pasha beino. Because we had a case where there was a teacher who was a little too willful with his students. What does that mean? He was too willful with his students. If I just took you and said, what do you think that means? That he was too willful with his students. Yeah, that's what Rashi says. He hit them too much. Not that he hit them too much, which we spoke about a few dapim ago, where there was a view that if you accidentally kill the student amidst a beating, that's not classic shogig because you're involved in a mitzvah. And I think I mentioned at the time Ron Atkinson's got a skit about that, where he calls the father and says, I'm really sorry to tell you that your child was very naughty and in the midst of a beating he died. And the father goes, what? And he says, yes, I'm really sorry. He was very naughty. No, he died. And he says, yes. And I've cancelled school tomorrow so that we can all attend the funeral. And he's, the father's going crazy, and by the end, Ronakin says, don't worry, I've been joking. I wouldn't cancel school for that idiot. and that's the end of the thing. So either way, there was a point in time where hitting children was seen effective discipline. Obviously, we have less conviction that that's effective today. But this, that's why I translated it as too willful with the students. There are still disciplinary measures that are in, I don't know what they do now actually for discipline. Detention, I think, is what they do, right? They say you have to stay after school. So you have to imagine the teacher, every time a child breathed, they said, right, detention. And it's just too willful, meaning this is, we thought this is not effective. So they one of the rabbis took an oath. Adre Rav Achar. Rav Achar took an oath, this guy will not teach in any of our schools. He is too willful with the students. It is not working. So that's on public consensus, he took an oath. Unbreakable vow. He says, no one will ever hire this guy. Va'adre Ravina. And Ravina revoked the vow. We said, it's unbreakable. He said, oh, but he revoked it because it's a mitzvah. So this is proof you can undo an unbreakable vow in the case of a mitzvah. So he started to dike vate. Because he says, that there wasn't a teacher as good as him. Which is, but out of context, this looks like, oh, there was an abuser. And the rabbi said, well, he's the best teacher, so let's rehire him. Which is why I've said, contextually, they didn't see hitting as abuse. They saw too much hitting as bad pedagogy. But so if we think today detention is an abuse, too much detention is bad pedagogy, we'd say, but look, at the end of the day, they're too willful. They're too much of a disciplinarian. But if they're the best teacher, maybe we should hire them and the kids are going to be a little too intimidated and we think it's a bit unfair, but this isn't abuse. So that's why Ravina comes along and says, we're going to cancel that vow, proving that the case of the rapist saying, I vow not to marry my wife, can't be the second case. So there are only two cases, bottom line, where you can get with if it's a lav shenita klase. So again, we've now finished our material for day, and we're at a point where we've said, we are very reluctant to give lashes. So much so that there are only two cases where you can take the remedy off the table volitionally, where we'll whip you. One is if you kill the bird, and one is when you eat the bread. And again, if we had all the time in the world, we could start playing, why would these be the two cases, killing a mother bird and eating food? Why would those be the two standout examples where you can take the remedy off the table and you say, you've given us no choice, we need to whip you. But nothing else exists. And what the Gemara, what we'll start with next time, is the Gemara picks up, finally, on the next part of the Mishnah, which is eating treif, at which point the Gemara is going to begin by going, oh, and if you eat treif, we whip you. And actually, the first person who whips, we'll do three lines just to make it. Because Amr Yurub says, if you eat the worm that lives in a cabbage, malkin lay, we whip you, mishum sheres hasharet sala aretz, for eating treif. And if somebody ate a bekarba, this worm of the cabbage, v'nagde Rabbi Yehuda, and we have a case where Rabbi Yehuda whipped him. Seems like an odd thing to say. And Rashi and Tosfot are all toying with, well, what's novel about this? If it's a crime, of course Rabbi Yehuda whipped him. And Tosfot says, oh, it must be, it's about a kind of creature we didn't know you'd get whipped for. And Rashi starts explaining, oh, it's because it never left the cabbage. It's teaching a novelty. If we read it in line with what we've been saying, the novelty is Rabbi Yehuda was willing to whip him. We've just spent pages saying, we don't want to whip, we don't want to whip, we don't want to whip. Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't get whipped for this. Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't get whipped. And I was saying, there was a case, somebody broke the law, and Rabbi Yehuda whipped him. Don't think Rabbi Yehuda is like a lefty, I don't like whipping. He just thinks it's not effective. But in a case where you commit a crime, where you've been warned, where there's no remedy, he wasn't queasy about whipping you. You need to maintain the moral boundaries of society, and we're just trying to figure out what's the most effective way. We'll push ahead with that next time. In the meantime, I thank you for your patience, your flexibility, and I pray upon your compassion to forget everything that you've heard this morning before 8:15. In the meantime, benching.